Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Comrade, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, comrade.
How are you today?
I am warm. I'm in Washington, D.C. Well into the 80s.
Yeah, right. What takes you to Washington?
I gave a little talk today at Constitution Hall and about freedom of the press and a bunch of constitutional issues. And then this afternoon, I took a wander around the Library of Congress with Mark Pocan.
All right. That sounds like an exciting field trip, Congressman. Congressman Nichols.
I have my daughter with me. More like her journey, I think, in that regard.
Okay. I don't even know. I don't know where to start today, but we could start in the sewer. Yeah, should we start
really?
In the sewer? You want to
really?
Start? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm afraid.
Okay, here is the Donald Trump Twitter ad.
It's hard for me to say the word rape. I always usually say sexual assault, but rape is the perfect terminology for what happened. I had made a huge mistake by not coming forward sooner and by denying it. I had denied it.
Yep, because you were afraid.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was afraid.
And tell everybody again about the Hillary encounter.
She comes directly over to me and starts her little talk about how appreciative she was of everything I was doing in Bill's campaign. And I started to just leave. I didn't want to have anything to do with her.
And you felt that she knew.
And she grabbed my arm and my hand.
Yeah.
And she pulled me back into her and said very low, she said, do you understand everything you do? And it frightened me. I'm so appreciative to Donald Trump for bringing it. I couldn't. It's very difficult for me to bring it forward because it's still too painful. But I appreciate his efforts.
That was from the Sean Hannity Show. I played the wrong clip, but it's the same gist. Do we really?
I think the point is there.
I'll be honest with you. When Juanita Broderick did the interview with Lisa Myers from NBC, I know people were kind of burnt out because the impeachment thing was going on. I didn't know it if it happened for sure, but I was troubled by it. But I don't think it has any relevancy to the campaign in 2016. None.
I'd go to that point for sure, and probably a little deeper, only in to say that the American people were pretty aware of the issues that were in play and the concerns, what people were saying, and the back and forth on all these issues. Their choice, or at least the sentiment that they put forward in polling, and frankly the choice of the Congress, ultimately the Senate, was to say that this was not an issue that the country was going to pursue. It was a painful one, and it was divisive in its time, to be sure. For Donald Trump to try and relitigate this 20 years later, two decades later, I think suggests an attitude toward politics that is so scorched earth that no matter how troubled somebody might be or concerned somebody might be about this, or whatever they may think, they ultimately have to ask themselves, is this really what you want in a president? You really want somebody who's going to prosecute every fight in this way, which is to go, you know, to the most extreme, the harshest, the most purely divisive place? If it is, then you can be comfortable with Trump, because he's going to give you more of this all the time. He will always seek to absolutely destroy. But boy, I would take this as a note of caution, because I think the American people will choose not to relitigate this. I may be wrong, but that's my sense. But B, I think that an awful lot of Americans would be conscious that somebody's going to go to this point so casually on these issues, as Trump has, will go to equally destructive points on the next issue and the issue after that.
So Mark Halperin today said this morning on Morning Joe that Trump is trying to basically dominate the discussion and fill the void and sort of inoculate himself against charges that he's a sexist by doing this.
Sure. I think, you know, what did you have in the New York Times on Sunday, right? I mean, you just have had articles that have been raising these issues. And in fact, people saying that the articles kind of went soft on Trump, that they weren't as aggressive as they could have been. And so the likelihood that there will be more articles, more coming out. I think Trump is a creature of media. I think he reflects media. I think he anticipates encounters all the time. And so, yes, I think Mark Halperin is exactly right on this issue.
Here's the actual clip.
Let's talk about this now. Donald Trump took his criticisms of former President Bill Clinton to a new level yesterday, resurfacing allegations of sexual misconduct and even a murder conspiracy when he discussed the 1993 suicide of Clinton aide Vince Foster, which has been the subject of far-fetched and widely dismissed conspiracy theories. It's something President Clinton alluded to at a campaign rally this past Friday.
I know the Republicans have been mean to her and they say terrible things. You got to respect them. They're good at this. They delegitimize the people they don't like. You think the stuff they said about her is bad? They accuse me of murder. I mean, our memories are short. It's what they do.
So then yesterday, the Washington Post published this. When asked in an interview last week about the Foster case, Trump dealt with it as he has with many edgy topics, raising doubts about the official version of events.
All right, I still haven't been able to get to that thing for some reason. I haven't labeled something else. All right, so Bill Clinton is sort of out there dancing around the edges of this. Where do you see this going?
Look, I think there's two things that Donald Trump is trying to do here. Number one, I think he is trying to inoculate himself, as you suggested, and as Mark Halperin has suggested. Number two, I think he's trying to push Bill Clinton out of the game. And I think his reason for doing that is that, as we saw with the Obama campaign in 2012, the Obama reelection campaign, Bill Clinton was a pretty brilliant campaigner. He was... You know, Obama himself said that Clinton was better at explaining the economic successes and accomplishments than Obama was, right? And so, whether you like Bill Clinton or dislike him, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, and I think you and I actually disagree with him on quite a few issues. So, there's that reality. But I think Trump is no fool, and I think Trump recognizes that... if he can make things unpleasant enough, embarrassing enough, difficult enough for Bill Clinton to kind of get Bill Clinton pushed out of some states or get Bill Clinton pushed to the sidelines of the presidential competition, then he has accomplished one of his many goals. So, you know, I don't think we can deny for a second that that's in play.
So Jimmy Carter has decided to speak up. Former President Carter, in an interview on Monday, spoke of the resurgence of open racism, saying, "I don't feel good except for one thing. I think the country has been reawakened that the last two or three years, the fact that we haven't resolved the race issue adequately." He said the Republican animosity towards President Obama had a heavy racial overtone, and that Donald Trump's surprisingly successful campaign for president had tapped a waiting reservoir where there is inherent racism. Carter conducted a telephone interview to call attention to his summit meeting plans in Atlanta. So, your thoughts on President Carter's remarks?
I think he's absolutely right. Look, you know, whether people like it or not, whether they're comfortable with it or not, I think what we learned during the Obama presidency is that there's a divide in this country that runs deeper than we would like to acknowledge. There is a divide in this country that is, frankly, exploited by some people politically, and I happen to agree with Carter. I think Carter is right. I also think it's very important that Carter's speaking up. You know, somebody suggested an idea for a campaign ad that would start out with Jimmy Carter saying, or, you know, something about Trump, right? And they'd have a quote from him. And then they'd have a quote from Bill Clinton about Trump and, you know, that. Then they'd have George H.W. Bush. And then they'd have George Bush, right? And the idea that you would, you know, kind of go across the whole list of former presidents. And, you know, I think that there is something to this. Look, I fully recognize that some people, you know, in fact, clearly Donald Trump ran against former presidents and sitting presidents. He ran against the establishment, right? And so in some ways that won't hurt him. But the bottom line on all this is that I do think there does come a point where people of conscience start to say, boy, this guy really shouldn't be president for a whole bunch of reasons. And I'll say something about Jimmy Carter that will never be said by the never Trump fools, right? The people who thought Ted Cruz was some sort of fix for our politics and who have always bashed Jimmy Carter. Do you know what Jimmy Carter actually has a lot of connection with and more respect from than I think a lot of our political elites notice? Evangelicals. Whether you love him or hate him, whether you think he was the perfect president or not, one thing that people recognize is that this guy was an evangelical who got elected president. He continues to teach Sunday school. He speaks about his personal relationship with God. He speaks about the role of prayer in his own battle with cancer and other issues. And so when he steps up, and also as a former governor of a southern state, I think there's much more consequence than the silly, absurd, irresponsible so-called never Trump people who, you know, don't really quite, you know, they may not want to have Trump as their nominee, but they're not quite ready to stand up and stand strong. But there's a lot of Americans, I think, who will look at that. Former President Carter, former President Clinton, former President Bush, all distancing themselves from Donald Trump.
Paul from AMS with us on the Big FM 93.7.
We are having an inventory clearance sale. And we've had some people come in and take excellent advantage of that. And we've got lots and lots of really good equipment left, too.
So your location?
Right near the corner of PD and Verona Road on the southwest side of Madison. You can call us at 608-274-7400, amsmadison.com, or you can even like us on Facebook.
Sounds great. Paul from AMS.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Boy, things are getting a little crazy in the Democratic primary. Hillary Clinton failed to meet her obligation, or at least her promise, to debate in California. She had promised to do four debates. She's done three. She had promised to do one in California. I don't know if you wear this, John, but that's a really, really big state.
Yep. And, boy, did you really think, Sly, when Hillary Clinton made her commitment to participate in a lot of debates back at a point where she was trying actually to embarrass senators, you know, her hand, so they kind of went back and forth. She tried to force a New Hampshire debate on a theory that somehow that would help her carry New Hampshire. And, you know, it was back and forth, and then finally they got this agreement to do a whole bunch of debates. Did you really think if she was in any kind of position to claim the nomination, she was going to do a debate with him in May? I mean, really? I'm not saying that,
you know,
she's right. I'm not complimenting this choice. I think,
again,
I think people who commit to make due debates should do debates. I think also that somebody who plans to be the nominee of a political party for president of the United States ought to be, you know, kind of relish the idea of debates. But,
well, she's pretty good. She's a pretty good debater.
I think debates helped her. I think they may well have been critical to her getting in the upper hand in the race for the nomination.
I asked you yesterday, who's giving her advice? They know what her problems are. I'm sure they've done a zillion focus groups. It must be painful to sit and listen to them, to listen to people talk about her. Can those advisors of hers take a look at what her problem is and why people don't trust her, and take a situation like this and say, this is a perfect opportunity for us to to undo some of the negative perceptions of her. In other words, yeah, honor your commitment. Look, do something.
And also nail it, right? Go in there and just do great. Just do great, right? Look, I totally agree with you, and I think it's certainly within the realm of her skill set for a variety of reasons. However, I'll tell you two reasons, you know, two things. Number one, I think, as I've said from the start of this campaign, I genuinely think that the people around her are giving her some of the worst advice possible. I think they've done it again and again and again. And I think that it has been very damaging to her. I think she's been harmed by, you know, taking the counsel of her aides. And they will say, oh, well, we won the nomination. Well, with all due respect, you started the race with a, what was it, a 60-point lead in the polls. So I just don't think they're very, I don't think they're nearly as good as, at what they do as they think they are. That's number one. Now, I'm going to counter my argument there. I'm going to give you the flip side of it. There is an example on this of something that does concern some folks. And it's not about this particular race, but it's a historic example. In 1972, George McGovern had the clear advantage in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination going into the California primary. Didn't have it locked up, but he had an advantage. He agreed to a debate with Hubert Humphrey, and Hubert Humphrey said things about McGovern in that debate and, you know, around that debate that ended up doing tremendous damage to McGovern. They ended up actually harming McGovern. And so I think that there's become almost an accepted standard in the political class that if you've got an upper hand, you just don't do debates you don't have.
Well, let's listen to what Hillary Clinton said in 2008.
Yeah, more than an hour, we're in good shape.
You know, yesterday about participating in a Fox News debate in California, which Sanders has agreed to do.
I haven't thought about it. We'll consider it.
This cycle, there have only been 9 Democratic debates so far. Clinton debated then-Senator Obama 19 times during the 2008 campaign and sounded open to more of them.
I just believe that this is the most important job in the world. It's the toughest job in the world. You should be willing to campaign for every vote. You should be willing to debate anytime, anywhere.
That was then. This is now.
Yeah. Look. Yeah, I'm afraid you're going to find quite a few of that was then, this is now statements, right? What was the statement a couple of years ago about the TPP? And so what we know is that politicians, and not just this one, tend to have a convenience gene that makes them capable of saying things that are helpful to them at certain moments and then changing their stand at other moments. But the first question you bring in here, and that's putting everything on the table, putting the concerns you've raised and then putting some of the stuff we talk about with McGovern Humphrey, all of this stuff in place. If you look at the basic dynamics of this 2016 race and the potential, I would still say that Hillary Clinton should do that debate. I think she should do that debate because at the end of the day, she's done very, very well in debates so far. And this is a big deal. If Bernie Sanders were to go scorched earth in a final debate when he has, you know, frankly, a pretty uphill run, do you really think that would necessarily, I don't think that's his style, and B, I don't necessarily think it would help him that much. So at some fundamental level, I think that Clinton could have an honorable debate with Bernie Sanders. Sanders might come out ahead and you know, it might benefit him, but I don't think that she has to fear that it would be some sort of, you know, horrible, damaging circumstance. And I think she has the potential, not the certainty, but the potential to really, A, you know, kind of seize attention away from Trump, seize attention away from, you know, all the sturm and drang we talked about in the first segment, and B, you know, really show herself as a candidate. So,
well,
if I was advising her, I'd say do it.
If you were to believe the poll that came out today from the ABC affiliate in Los Angeles, she's got a significant lead in that state.
Most of the polls suggest this. Most of the people I talked to in California suggest it. Although, I will tell you, Sanders' crowds are huge, and the energy is very significant. And so, I wouldn't rule out Well, first off, she's going to go in and campaign in California, and she's going to, I think, ultimately put money into California because, you know, I think that it's a real race. And also, I think there is a race in a number of the other states that will vote around June 5th through June 7th, states in Puerto Rico as well. So, you know, I just I have a feeling that, you know, the Clinton people are playing it hyper-cautious, and we've talked about a lot of stuff. That's the number one thing I would say to be concerned about, because at the end of the day, you're not going to beat Donald Trump with a hyper-cautious campaign.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming on the show today, brother. Enjoy Washington.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
All right.